Folks, welcome back to Beer and Business. Wow. Darren, today was probably one of the most important episodes we've ever done.
I learned about 478 today. That's amazing.
You did. Today we talked to Molly Pruitt. She is a licensed professional counselor. And I can't think of any year, 2020, kind of a shit show, Darren?
Just a little bit.
Can't think of a better time for us to talk about mental and emotional health. And, you know, there's a really good chance that either you or somebody that you care about is really having a difficult time with this year. And maybe you went from general anxiety to something that's a little bit more significant. And today we got into all that. And man, we covered a lot of ground.
We did. So listen up, folks.
Yes. Please stay with us till the very end. This was really important, probably the most important conversation we've had on this podcast. Folks, it's Molly Pruitt.
Welcome to Beer and Business. You found the best podcast for entrepreneurs. We serve crafty business knowledge, comedy, and yes, beer. And now it's time for our hosts. If he were to pat you on the back, you'd list it on your resume. It's Jake Mullins. And his beer never gets warm. It just sits there, staying frosty, waiting for him. Mr. John Winnie. And if you spell his name in Scrabble, you automatically win. Ladies and gentlemen, it's Darren Flanagan.
Molly Pruitt, welcome to the studio.
Thank you for having me.
So Darren, Molly is a longtime fan of the show.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And she, I met you actually, I think our first Beer and Business event at Jailhouse Brewing.
It was at least a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
And I met her at the second, one of the other events at Jailhouse.
Yeah. It's just awesome. Yeah.
So first of all, thanks for supporting the show and listening to us knuckleheads.
Absolutely.
And, but Darren, we've got a bit of a problem.
What's that?
So when Jailhouse closed, I guess Molly went into a bit of mourning and she has not drank beer since.
That's right. No. That's correct.
And so today, hopefully, you know, typically you're helping other people because you're a counselor. But today we're going to help you. So our therapy is drinking Lime Creek, the official beer of the Beer and Business podcast now. Okay. You're drinking Rangefinder, which is a lighter beer. That's what you like. I know. And Darren and I are drinking Chinchillin. Yes, little session IPA. Oh my God, this thing is so good. And I'm getting excited for the next beer that's coming, which we'll talk about when we open it. But I'd like you to give this a little taste.
Let's do it.
Tell us if this is going to renew your faith in beer.
We'll do.
Mm.
Ah, perfect for summer. For sure.
So good.
Really great.
See?
That's what they made it
there's,
for.
I mean, we all mourn the loss of Jailhouse, but there's life after that.
We do.
There's Lang Creek life after that.
Yeah, absolutely.
They've been a great partner of the show. And, and hopefully next time I see you, you're going to have a refrigerator full of Lang Creek.
You betcha. Can't wait to stop by there.
All right. So Molly, for you guys listening, Molly is a licensed professional counselor.
That's correct. Right?
So you deal with families and individuals. Mm-hmm. And I think this is a really important episode, Darren, probably one of the most important we've ever done. And I really want to make sure that all of you stay with us till the end, because we're going to cover a lot of ground today, a lot of important topics. And what I want you to know is that we're going to be providing you tools and resources. So if you yourself are in a position where you're not sure if you need a little bit of help, or maybe somebody you work with or somebody you care about, friend, family member, that you think, geez, I'm not quite sure if they need some extra resources or some extra help, we're going to help you identify what those things are. Mm-hmm. Some of the, you know, I guess, triggers. Or
can we just bring them a six pack of Lime Creek? That'll cheer them up.
It depends.
Well, if their last name's Flanagan, I mean, that's all the therapy you need.
Yes, no.
But we're going to be providing people with real resources and actionable things that they can do to help people out or even help themselves.
Absolutely.
So with all that being said, here we are in 2020.
Oh boy. The cluster that it's been. Yeah.
The shit show of all shit shows. We've had murder hornets. We've had pandemic, lockdown, quarantine, masks. We've had racial tension. We've had riots. And oh, by the way, just on the top of all that, it's an election year. So yeah. Hey, have fun.
Yes.
Have fun with all that. If you're not stressed out or have a little bit of anxiety right now, check your pulse. You might be dead. Because it's been a wild year. So I want to start this discussion by talking about anxiety, because I think all of us feel it to some extent. But what I don't know is when does anxiety go from something that's normal, situational, where I should be feeling it, to something that's a detriment and maybe I need some form of help?
Right.
How do I know when I've crossed that line?
So everybody has anxiety. It's actually a protective factor that we have. That means it's a strength that we have here as humans.
So like when I get nervous around Darren.
Yes, exactly. When you get nervous.
Saved my life a couple of times.
Fight or flight. That's yes. The kind of, a lot of people have that when they're around
me. You get nervous when you come to certain physical crossroads. Yeah. Yes. And, or if you're in traffic, you might sometimes want to make sure that you're, fully engaged and paying attention to what's going on.
And not shooting people.
Yes, that may indicate an issue, right? That may be going too far. Mm-hmm. So anxiety is something, and it's a word, a ubiquitous word that we use in society all the time. Like, oh my gosh, I'm so anxious. Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh. And so I think we do get a little bit confused as to when is it a problem and when is it normal? So sure. A normal, healthy anxiety means that you might consider, what to do about a certain situation. You might ask for help. But then when you really change and really become disordered in anxiety, technically, it really interferes with your daily life, your daily functioning. So let's say you love to be around people. And then all of a sudden you pull away from people. You can't find yourself very interested in returning phone calls. Let's say you're used to being alone, but then all of a sudden you find yourself needing to be around others, very insecure about being by yourself. You might see your children go from happy-go-lucky and maybe easy to please, pretty water off a duck's back, as they say.
Sure.
But then all of a sudden they're clinging to mom or dad or to a caregiver. They're very worried. They may ask them about, are you going to be okay? I'm worried. Please don't leave the house. These are some indications that it's going from an anxious time in your life to a very stressful disordered.
Sure.
So that in your life. Does that make sense?
It does. And that word's really important, disorder. Yeah. Because that to me signals that now it's interfering.
Interfering.
In some way with life.
Very good.
And I think one of the interesting things is because I'll first start with people that maybe did not have a disorder.
Correct.
Prior to, the pandemic and all the stuff that happened after that. There's been a lot of changes. And I think it may be somewhat easier to spot changes in somebody or changes in yourself where before somebody was social, now they don't want to be around people. And I've seen them
when there were all that shelter in place, you never got to see anybody.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I know people that even now it's not just they're afraid to be physically around people, but I've seen people that have actually, they don't want to call you back. Mm-hmm. They don't want to engage
Very
at all.
True. Exactly.
I've seen that. So mm-hmm. I think first of all, we should start by searching for changes in people.
I think
right?
That's number one. It's really amazing how much we as humans actually kind of tell on ourselves based on the behavior that we display. So somebody might, I'm really just used to hearing from them, or golly, the social distancing has been very difficult, but I've reached out a few times and it's so unlike them. You may say that it just seems very unlike them to not call me back or to not, be here or be engaged in some way. That is a great trigger or thought point to keep with you no matter what you're going through. Anytime you see a change in a person's behavior, that's something that's a great alarm system to us to say. That's a time when your anxiety can be helpful to say, hey, I'm worried. Mm-hmm. It's worth double checking on this person.
What about, I've heard people talk about, the inability to concentrate mm-hmm. or, being tired. Are there other like physical, like if I wasn't very tired prior mm-hmm. to this and now I am, should I be considering it? It could be my anxiety.
I'm so glad you brought that up. So again, it's another one of those change in behavior. So someone who cannot sleep. Mm-hmm. is as concerning as someone who's sleeping too much. And if we could picture a visual of in your mind to tell a little bit of a difference between depression and anxiety, because anxiety and depression can run hand in hand. Mm-hmm. So anxiety is when your mind is thinking into the future and can't really make sense of it, or it gets preoccupied there. Depression is when your mind starts thinking about the past a lot and you can't seem to move your thoughts from there. So both of those can cause a lot of sleep disruptions. So whether you're in your anxiety, if anxiety is heightening, or if possibly a depression is heightening.
That is a really, really simple and elegant way of putting that. Because I hear people so often, they interchange depression and anxiety like it's the same disorder.
True.
And, you know, I don't do this for a living, but I didn't think they were, but I could never explain the difference. Mm-hmm. You just did it in a sentence and
there it is.
There. Yeah. Huh. Who knew it was that
so
easy?
So simple, we can understand it.
If Darren gets it, you've done a very good job explaining it.
I said we.
Well, okay. You know.
Well, so what about,
yes.
Because some people say, oh, I'm anxious. A panic attack.
Yes.
Is that from anxiety? I mean, too much, or is that okay to have it once in a while?
So that's a great question too. So anxiety attacks and panic attacks, some would say they're a little bit different. An anxiety attack, that might be somewhere where you go, you might catch your breath. You might say, oh shit. You might stop and look around. You might feel around for your car keys or your phone or your kid or something important to you. Mm-hmm. That could be something of like an anxiety attack. A panic attack is truly, you'll hear people say something like, oh my gosh, I'm dying. I feel like I'm dying. I need to go to the emergency room because I think I'm having a heart attack. The room goes silent, you know, or
debilitating.
Yes, absolutely debilitating.
Okay.
And again, panic disorder would be when it interferes with daily life. So some people can have a panic attack, but it's once in a while. A panic disorder means that it's happening regularly.
Okay.
Many times people do not know where it comes from. They're not even aware that their thoughts or whatever's happening in their body is leading them to a panic attack. That's what's so scary about it.
Let me ask you a question about that, because I've actually, I know somebody that had this happen recently, and they ended up going to, I don't know if it was a psychiatric facility or
urgent
medical
care sometimes,
I don't know, but they were in for a while.
Sure. Okay.
And her comment was that it just came out of nowhere.
Yes.
But is there typically an undiagnosed disorder going on that they just haven't paid attention to that leads to that? Or is it seriously something where you could be completely normal and then just one day have a debilitating panic attack?
That is the horror show that is panic attack.
Really?
You really can't. Of course, we could say from there, maybe there were some other symptoms that were showing that the person wasn't aware of because it wasn't necessarily interfering with their life. Or we are such good maskers. We're really good at figuring out workarounds when we have stress and anxiety and depression, that we may have figured out other ways, compromised ways to help us make it through. And a panic attack comes along and takes us all the systems we had in place aren't working anymore. Mm-hmm. So then a panic attack seems to come out of nowhere, air quotes. But yeah, that's exactly what happens.
Go ahead.
Well, I want to go back to anxiety and your initial comments on it, because I think this is really important. I have, and just like I'm sure both of you have, through this pandemic, I've gone through periods of heightened anxiety because there's just so much going on and you feel out of control and all of a sudden you can't see the people you care about. There's a lot of tension. You're worried about your business. There's just so much. And I have felt a high level of anxiety, but I never felt like it was in the way. And I'll draw an example. I used to race cars. Mm-hmm. And before every race, I would get really, really anxious. Mm-hmm. In fact, sometimes I'd get nauseous. Mm-hmm. You know, I was that scared. But then I'd get out on track. And it was almost like the anxiety sharpened my senses to a point to where I was brilliant. But I don't know that I would have had that same level of focus without the anxiety getting me there. And the reason why I'm saying that is because with our business, the times when I've gotten really anxious, it's usually followed by a period of extreme focus and decent performance. And so it's not, I guess the reason why I'm saying that is because I want your feedback. that sounds to me like it's healthy, even though I don't want all this anxiety because it sucks. I want a normal 2020, go F yourself. I'm ready for a do-over. Okay. I want a normal year, but I think this anxiety is helping me stay focused on the things that I really need to, but it's not getting in the way. I'm sleeping fine. It hasn't really messed with my relationship. So I don't feel like it's gotten in the way. So is that okay?
Yeah.
She says yes.
If it's not getting in the way, if it's not interfering. Now, what I would caution you or have you take a look at is maybe it actually is taking more of a toll than you necessarily realize. So that's when a loved one, someone you really care about and trust, each other, of course, you could ask Darren, am I sort of overdoing it or do I seem preoccupied with work? Because that's where our sense of control can really take over. I'm really, really great at my business. I want to take care of my family. I'm going to just, you know, head dive into the bottom of the pool because I can have control in that way. And wanting a sense of control is not a negative, inherently negative issue,
sure.
But it can be a manifest of anxiety, just trying really hard to figure out how to get control over a situation. So you might work harder. Yeah. So it's not necessarily a negative thing, but it would be a great time to check in with your people that you care about and trust to get some feedback to see if it's ramping up.
Let's take your comment and we'll draw it to its logical conclusion here, because I think it's a really good point. But Darren will come over and hang out at the farm sometimes. You know, when you come over and hang out, am I preoccupied or is it normal like it was prior to COVID? Well, normal. Hold on.
Relative. Be careful.
Okay. So
do you want me to answer?
Excuse
this?
Me. Did you write normal? Okay. It's probably not good, frankly. Okay.
But seriously.
No, it's still the same.
And same with you, right?
Yeah. I think. I don't know.
Well, tell you were. Normal is definitely the word I wouldn't use, but.
Well, no, until I moved Jake used to be in my regular contacts. I put him in my favorites and then he stopped answering my calls.
Oh, Jesus. So let's have a pity party for Darren. Lord have mercy.
But no, nothing is
serious. Yeah. So, and I'm saying that because I've had the same experience with other friends through this, sure. Where you get together with them and they seem completely normal and they're fully present, just like they were prior to. But I've also had friends that have gotten together with and it's like, something's off. Mm-hmm. And you can.
You sure you're okay, buddy?
Yeah, exactly.
You sure everything's
right?
Okay. Yeah.
And I don't even know how to
feeling maybe.
Right. I don't even know how to broach the subject. Mm-hmm. But I have noticed people that something's so going back to your original point, I've noticed something's different. Mm-hmm. And you know, so I think it's actually a brilliant point that we really need to be looking for, not only in ourselves but other people. Look for those changes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And what I would say in these specific situations, you guys have both been able to pull some different levers in your businesses. You know, you are real estate market. There's still, you know, some really great opportunities in there. We've got technology and some workplace spaces that are available. So you're both able to continue to be part of the essential world. Mm-hmm. You have some buddies and some friends that are not in those circumstances. Mm-hmm. So they may have been furloughed or they may be trying to start up a business or it may not have been considered essential or some of the laws could have changed, really impacting the business. Yeah. And they're going, we're good. We're really optimistic that everything's going to still be fine. But their insides are going, mm-hmm. You know.
So yeah. What are some tools and tips that you can give to our listeners? Like, hey, if you're starting to feel this way, do this or mm-hmm. try this. What can we do if we're feeling a little even regular anxious, but maybe more often than we used to.
Yeah. And I'm glad you said that because I actually noticed that you clenched up your hands and you moved your body language. And that's actually what physiologically happens. And that means what we can see on the outside. That's what's actually happening when stress is happening. We're going to either tend to notice that we're clenching our fists, that we are sweating more profusely, that our faces are getting red, that we can feel our chest, our heart pounding in our chest, just a discomfort in our bodies. And so that's Step number one
for
is
me,
just
that's when I just change to a different alcohol.
Well, no, typically when I see you doing the fist clenching thing is when we're at the bottom of the bottle.
Yeah.
And then you're like, what's next? Now, oh my God. And he's clenching
and
sweating.
Anticipatory stress. That's very good. Anticipatory stress is, I'm out and I don't know what's going to happen. And if I can't get any more, that's anticipatory stress.
Don't make me drink the quiet man. Please don't make me drink the quiet man. That's big stuff. But I mean,
well, does that make sense? So
they do tell you though when you're getting anxious or something, a lot of times or you're nervous, clench your fist for a few seconds, let them out, take a deep breath, and that'll help relax you a little more.
This is a little bit different. It's when you're not even noticing that you're doing it. Mm-hmm. That's a guided meditation.
Okay.
What you're talking about, you're actually being instructed to intentionally clench and release. This is something where, let's just say, stop. Listen, and then you notice that your hands are clenched. What is happening? And then also the next step would be to pay attention to what you're listening to. Then pay attention to what you're watching. And then pay attention to if you're dehydrated, if you've had anything to eat or drink that's healthy, if you've had any social connection. That's a little mental floss checklist. So mental floss, look at your senses. Mm-hmm. What's around me? That's something you do very quickly on a checklist. As soon as you practice it just a few times, you'll really get used to it. And then you'll notice, and then you'll immediately reward your brain by saying, I have control over this situation. I can release my hands. Mm-hmm. I can sit quietly. I can relax and take a breath.
You mentioned guided meditation.
Yes.
And that is one of the things that I learned a long, long time ago. You know, it always hit me Sunday night, going to bed. Oh, I'm tired. I can't sleep. Why? And the brain is racing like for the next week. It's like, shut off the thing. Somebody taught me just that little guided meditation where you start with your toes and you clench your toes and you release, you hold them for 5 seconds and you work all the way up your body. And by the time, you know, if I can get all the way up to my chest or my neck, I was like,
you're out.
Boom, I'm gone. And I think that probably would help people.
Absolutely.
As well.
And breathing as well. Breath work is really important.
Mm-hmm. It is.
Now, some people believe they have to be really, really good at it or pay a lot of money to figure it out. But a very simple tool is called 4-7-8. You're going to breathe in for 4 seconds.
Okay.
Hold your breath for 7 seconds. You're going to breathe out for 8 seconds.
Oh, yeah.
So it's sort of like a tongue twister.
Circular breathing in your nose and out your mouth?
Correct.
Okay.
So we're going to breathe in.
Breathing.
Hold. And then release. And you do that until you notice that you're kind of restored to a sense of calm.
Man,
it's not as bad sitting next to Darren now.
See?
See?
I used to do that years ago. We used to do it with it for a different reason. 4-7-8. Okay.
Exactly.
4-7-8.
Exactly.
See, I always do the Serenity Now thing.
Serenity Now.
We just called it 4-2-0.
Exactly.
Y'all think about that one.
Yeah. And whatever works, you know, and that does work for some people. It actually creates anxiety for other people.
4-7-8. Mm-hmm. That's great.
So that's a very quick. So breathing, yes, guided meditation. And some of these words freak people out. Like, that's why they don't want to go to counseling or they don't think that they're going to be good at it or figuring out how to help themselves because we've kind of, but these are very approachable, very, very findable, very implementable helpers.
Sure.
They can help immediately for anybody.
Well, that's a great, great type of meditation. And people don't realize it doesn't take, people think you have to get into Zen moment.
Exactly.
Your brain's got to be emptied out.
Right.
And you're like, no, that's not it at all.
Yeah. I'm really glad you brought that up. And you brought up settling your brain down on the Sunday night sort of anxiety train. So learning how to do that, to implement it, that's awesome. Self-care.
So what I'd like to do is I'd like to ask you, because really what we want to do is tap into your professional brain. You know, obviously you being a counselor, and I have seen a lot of people through this pandemic that I think are at the point where talking to somebody, talking to a professional would be in their best interest. Mm-hmm. They've kind of crossed that line, at least I think. And so what I'd like to do is I'd like you to tell us where, like, first of all, what are those things that would alert you to say, you know what, it's time to have the conversation with somebody. And then what the hell do you say? Like, hey, Darren, you need help, buddy. But I say that to him all the
time.
And it's in one ear and out the other. But seriously, like that's a really difficult conversation mm-hmm. to have. I've never had it.
Yeah.
But I'm at the point where there's some people that I think I need to have it with.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't even know how to do it.
I'm so glad you're bringing this up, because one of the number one hopes of every single clinician out there is to break the quote unquote stigma. I even hate that word to even bring it up, mm-hmm. but to make it to where to allow the space for people to have the conversations to where it's as normal as asking, how's your mom and them, you know,
mm-hmm.
just being able to say like, hey, you know, hey, I've been through some things, and I'll just share personally as an anxiety and depression experiencer, also ADHD. I had no idea what any of this stuff was. So felt myself through the darkness, not knowing any way to that there was help, that there was a name for it, that there was a lot of, there's a lot of isolation included with these thoughts, a lot of shame, a lot of worthlessness, a lot of confusion, a lot of, just hopelessness. And
well, that's really cool for you to be somebody that's experienced that and now be in a position to help others. I think that's there's no better way.
100%.
Well, I mean, not only am I the president of the Hair Club for Men, but I'm also a member.
That's one of my favorite lines of all time. I use it all the time. And people are like, what are you talking about? I actually say that in my counseling office all the time. And people stare at me the same way everybody's staring at you. So it's hilarious. Sorry, that tickled me.
That's awesome. Well, I mean, they do have that. People do find it's a stigma. It's like, I'm not crazy. I don't need to go see somebody. And it's like, that's not the point.
Mm-hmm.
You go see somebody to, one, maybe talk to them a little bit. They're not going to dig all the way back. It's not like you see on TV shows and that, like, I'll lay on the couch and tell me about your childhood. Let's go from there.
There's a little bit of that.
Sometimes it can, but
unless you're Darren, like, I don't really want to know, buddy.
Right. I don't have a childhood.
Let's just try to get you to function.
If we're talking about today's anxiety right now, somebody is trying to figure out how to deal with it, we're dealing with the here and now.
Mm-hmm.
And so going to talk to a professional mm-hmm. such as yourself, you can help them find where those issues are. You can help them work their way through it, hopefully reduce that without having to say, oh yeah, we got to put you on medication and make you walk around like a zombie, or you're so screwed up. You know, this all happened when you were growing up and this is why you're feeling it you are today. You may get there, but it's dealing with the issue. Like Jake said, what about right now? What about the people that are feeling so anxious because of this 2020? And going to see somebody like yourself can help them get through that. And it's not a negative thing.
So let's do this mm-hmm. because I want to go back to my question, which is how do we identify when mm-hmm. and then what do we do? And I think that in the short term, we're probably not going to do anything to change the cultural stigma.
True.
So with that being said, we all know that.
Mm-hmm.
How do we recognize when, and then what do we do? Because that's where I'm really struggling with.
And I think Darren actually brought up a great point, is you're really saying like, I know.
even Molly's surprised.
How are you doing?
Yeah.
You know, a lot of times we glance right past that and we start barging in with our own BS. Oh my gosh, this happened. Can you believe this is happening? Blah, 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 blah. We want to be heard. And every once in a while, you know, how are you doing? And then they say, fine, blah, 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 back to me. So really taking a moment to just be like, so what's been going on? You know,
mm-hmm.
what are some of the another question is, what are some of the conversations that are happening in your house? You know, and it's like, oh my gosh, I just lost my job. Oh, that's a lot. So how are you dealing with that? What are the plans for that? I have no idea. I've tried so hard. I'm banging my head up against the wall. You know, so they're leading you actually into opening up a conversation by saying something like, I've just really understood that there's people out there that can help us better deal with anxiety. Have you ever talked to anybody about that might have, you know, special skills and understanding how to help you in that?
Then you whip out Molly's card.
Exactly.
Staple it to their forehead.
Exactly. That's the preference. Does that make sense? What I'm saying? No, it does. Where you're just really rolling into it in a more natural way.
You're drawing it out.
Yeah. What I hear is open-ended questions.
Yes. Very good.
A lot of listening. Because mm-hmm. what I want to... So I know somebody, right? Mm-hmm. Somebody that I really
need. Let's take a scenario.
Right. So I've got a friend that I think is really struggling with this, you know, real issues in the business.
Issues in the business.
Mm-hmm. And anger about feeling out of control and feeling like he's being lied to.
Increased anger.
Yeah. So anger.
Something he's not, that's out of character for him.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And anxiety. Mm-hmm. And I feel like I'm at that mm-hmm. point, but I think the first thing hearing you that I need to do is just have open-ended questions. Mm-hmm. You know, tell me how you're doing. Tell me about the family. Tell me how this is affecting mm-hmm. the business. Just get them to talk. Yeah. And have them lead you to those. Absolutely. Because what I hear you saying is they've got to lead you to those big pain points.
Exactly. It's the most important thing we can do is show that we care.
You 100%. Actually, you had a term. We were talking the other day about an event that triggers it.
An activating event.
Activating event.
So an activating event is something that happens in your present life that just changes everything. Mm-hmm. So for some people, it was the broader COVID. For some people, it's parenthood. For other people, it's job loss. There's so many transitions that can be activating events. A breakup, a marriage.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. So
children.
Children.
Yeah. An extra one that you weren't expecting.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So it's like,
a bonus. Yes, that's right.
But what I see right now is a lot of activating events.
Correct.
You know, with kids are home now, they're not in school, you know, changes in the business, you know, me and my spouse are now in the home 7 days a week. Nobody's going to work. Like there's all these different things mm-hmm. that could happen. And, you know, maybe I wasn't prepared to deal with that. And mm-hmm. so I do.
What?
I have several friends actually that, you know, when I'm around them, I'm like, oh gosh, I really think I need to say so, but I don't know how. So I get them to talk and I help them. I pull out of them those pain points and I'm like, yeah.
But you're not comfortable yet asking them to.
Well, how do I broach that topic? What's the best way for me to talk to somebody about a professional?
Mm-hmm. Ask them if they're seeing somebody.
Okay, let me ask. I'm going to throw it back. Question
yes.
with a question.
Yes.
What do you think about counseling?
I am actually all for it. And we'll probably talk about this today. I mm-hmm. actually went to counseling when I was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was about 10 years ago as an adult, I went for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll talk about my experience. And it was, I mean, it helped me tremendously both times.
That is one of the that is absolutely the number one way. Because if you say, have you thought about talking to a counselor? A lot of times people will recoil. Yeah. But when you say, when I say that from a place that I have also, you know, gone to get counseling and I dealt with specifically an issue, you know, so whether it's your anger or whether it's feeling out of control or whatever, you know, these folks are here to help you navigate through this, get a sense of direction,
mm-hmm.
get back on track. You know, think of things in a different way. Ultimate problem solvers. That's what we basically, I mean, mm-hmm. if we could sum it up, I am a problem solver. I want to help you figure out your problem and then get a solution and get relief. So that's the ultimate way, honestly, is when you have an affectionate or positive result from counseling or someone in your life has, and you can share that with other people, they're much more likely to take you up on it.
So what about our listeners that haven't had that experience, mm-hmm. but they're still in the same place where they've got a friend or family member that they want to have this conversation with?
Yeah, absolutely. So if I'm talking to the person that has not gone to counseling yet, let me point out something like Psychology Today. You can, behind your keyboard in the safety of your home, you can look in your area across the United States pick up some counselors in your area. Take a look at them. Look at their profiles. Research them. Look at their Facebook pages. Look at any of their social media. See if they'd be a great fit. I'm on there and, you know, we offer free consultation calls so that you can give a call and just see if it's a good fit for you. But before you even decide that you want to call somebody, take a look. There's some safe ways to venture out in that direction without pulling the trigger yet, you know?
Well, let's do this. So I think this might be helpful to people if they're listening and like, yeah, I've never done it. And as Darren said, you know, I think a lot of the cultural issues we have with counseling mm-hmm. stem from misunderstanding.
Correct.
You know, so it's not, you know, sit on the couch with the counselor smoking a pipe and tell me about your childhood. It's not what it's like. And I think if we took some time to talk through what that experience mm-hmm. is like, it might help people understand like, oh, okay, so that's what they could expect. So absolutely. What is it like yeah. going to see you if I'm dealing with anxiety?
So someone would either call, email, text, whatever's most comfortable. Hey, get on a phone call. Hey, how are you? And I will ask, what prompted your call today? And mm-hmm. they'll say, usually the activating event. Okay. Wow, that's a lot. Let's see if we can get you in and let's have a conversation. Typically about an hour, sometimes 45 minutes, sometimes people go longer, shorter.
Sometimes half a day.
Sometimes half a day. Virtual. There's virtual options as well as in-person options for your comfort. So then basically what a counselor will start it off with that you're safe here, that everything you talk about is confidential. And I think that's something that's really overlooked. And I won't belabor the point, but when you go to counseling, that person is not there judging you. That person is not there trying to gossip about you. They want to help you. That is their heart. That's why they're in this profession. So when you come in there, establishment of safety, we can talk here and it goes no further. There's just not a lot of places in your life that you can do that. Right?
That's actually really, really true. And it's such mm-hmm. a good point. Because that's something that I experienced yeah. as well. So I'll fully open kimono. When I went to counseling about 10 years ago, what was happening with me was I was feeling an unhealthy amount of anxiety. Mm-hmm. Like I was, you know, there'd be times when I'm just sitting there at my desk and all of a sudden I'm short of breath. And I had too much stuff going through my head. I was having a really hard time sleeping. And I'm like, I finally reached the point where I could admit to myself, I'm anxious and something's going on and I don't know what. I really had no idea. And it wasn't until I went and sat down with a counselor did I realize that, God, I had nobody I could just talk to, like, let it all hang out and not worry about what other people are going to think. Mm-hmm. You know, like my guy friends, I couldn't talk to him and say, there's times I'm just really anxious and I don't know why. What's wrong with you, dummy?
Try harder or stop doing that, right?
Or I'm worried about him saying, my God, you're like really successful and you got a great house. What the hell are you worried about? You're always worried about people casting aspersions.
Just suck it up and deal with it. That's what they, you know.
Seriously. I didn't think about that until I sat in that safe space and started to have those conversations like, this woman's not going to tell anybody. She doesn't, she's just here to help. And I can just let it all go. And sometimes even just being able to talk on a level where you're not worried about any type of judgment or how people are going to react can be therapeutic in and of itself.
Absolutely. There are really few places in our lives. And when we're in our families, I mean, they do care about us so much, but we are in attachment relationships with them. When you come into counseling, this is someone who can be a part of your family without being in the middle of your family. So we can really have a look where we don't have those attachments like that to you. So we're your advocate. That's the other thing is like, dude, we're 100 on your side. We think that you are the best person that ever walked into the room for real, not made up. And we see your strengths. We see the good in you. We see your pain. And that's what we want to help you with because mm-hmm. there are solutions that the everyday person doesn't know. I wish we all knew this stuff, but we don't.
Right. Sure.
You know? So, I mean, that's what you're bringing up is so crucial. It's like, how can I have this conversation with you, but I can't have it with my spouse?
Because
I'm not technically in the relationship. I don't have the history with you.
Mm-hmm. And you don't have to worry about it being brought up later.
Exactly.
In a conversation. Yeah, I think that's part of it.
If I really like unload and say all this stuff, is she going to think I'm sexy anymore? Mm-hmm. Or is she going to, you know, start to think, gosh, man, he's crazy. No, maybe I'm
in your sexy anymore.
She'll probably think you're sexier.
I know.
She'll probably think you're sexier because she'll feel closer to you, but we can work through that.
But that's the thing. But that's, you know, men think about things differently than women on a general basis. There's mm-hmm. exceptions. Mm-hmm. See, I got my little lawyers will be happy.
Lawyers will be thrilled.
But seriously, there's a lot of those things that whether and they may not even be rational. It's just how you're feeling.
100%. Mm-hmm.
I'll tell you something else that I thought was really fascinating about my experience as an adult going into counseling. I really thought my childhood was kind of screwed up. You know, it's like I could probably write a book about it. But I thought we were going to go and like unravel all this stuff and like, all right, I know it's got me all screwed up. So let's get in there and let's dig for the root. We didn't do any of that. In fact, we never really talked about my childhood. Really, what I was struggling with was self-dialogue. Mm-hmm. And the problem was, is I wasn't even aware of my self-dialogue. And it was even a term, like as a man, like self-dialogue, what are you talking about? It's like the things you say, I'm not saying anything to myself. There's no voices in my head. But then when I was getting into these situations of duress, she's like, okay, now I want you to, what is going on in your head? And I want you to stop and think about it. It's like, I think I'm going to fail. I think this is going to be bad. It's like, oh, there's negative stuff going on in there. And what she helped me with was turning negative self-dialogue into positive self-dialogue. And it was really that simple. I mean, we spent probably 6 months just, you know, I go in there a couple of times a month and we really worked on my self-dialogue. And that was it. Like it was habitual. Yeah. It was a habit that I had that was bad.
Did you notice what you did there? You said, when I'm under duress, I hear the self-dialogue. Did you notice you said that?
Yeah.
So when you're under duress, that is when your fight, flight, freeze, or fright activation, your primal brain that keeps you alive, keeps you from being eaten by the lions, is activated. And that's when all that stuff comes up. And guess what we're in when we have 22 activating events within 6 months?
Yeah. I think we're in fight or flight.
Correct. Or freeze or fright. So mm-hmm. notice.
Fright.
So that's where our relationships and our anxiety and our depression and our trauma and our stuff that we thought we dealt with bucket is activated. Mm. There's just so much duress. And that's a great word. You're going from stress to duress to anxiety to panic to disorder. You know, does that make sense?
It makes total sense. And, you know, if you're listening, none of it, this is the other thing, too. And I'm speaking as the consumer, not the professional. None of what I went through was uncomfortable.
No,
it was actually very comfortable.
I'm agreeing with you only because I've been there, done that a couple different times. I've seen a counselor a few times over the years for different things. And it wasn't uncomfortable, except one. There was one counselor. We didn't get along.
That happens.
We actually for sure. just argued.
It was uncomfortable for her?
It was probably because I argued with her methods were not. Yeah. I didn't like her methods and the way she did things. And so we debated about that instead. And I'm like, I think this will be the last time I see you. We're not a good fit.
And fit is so important. Mm-hmm. Fit is so important. And it's interesting. I've actually added that to my intro. Basically, when somebody comes to sit down, I will say, so what are your opinions about counseling? And then it's like, or other people are like, oh, I've done it before. It was amazing. Or other people are like, I have no idea. Right. I feel I'm at my wit's end. My doctor said I better come, you know, or pronto or what have you. So that can also help foster a healthy safety setting atmosphere.
I reached a level of maximum capacity of Xanax each day. So my doctor said I better go see some. I'm feeling anxious right now, though.
Mm-hmm. Me too. Because very anxious.
I have an empty beer glass.
Yeah. Can you get me something there, Darren? Yes, I'm ready.
Drum roll. That anticipatory stress.
Yes. Because I think what we're going to do is upgrade.
Okay.
Are we upgrading, Darren? Oh, Lord have mercy.
There we go.
Total consciousness.
That is, I mean, you could not have picked a more aptly named beer for this.
So this discussion. Total consciousness is a double IPA series. Okay. And this one is called Be the Ball.
Oh, Billy Baru.
West Coast double IPA. We had this last week. Oh my God, it's so good.
That's awesome.
You don't like IPAs, do you? Nobody's perfect.
You know, I'm sure Lime Creek does a great job.
Nobody's perfect. Don't worry about it. Oh, my gosh.
Meritzen. I'm sure the fall, they'll come up with some.
Here, I at least want you to smell this.
Okay.
Smell that beautiful can.
delicious.
Oh my God. It's like a garden.
So rewarding. Like a garden.
Yes.
Did you turn on the lawnmower?
Okay. So. Yes. So I have a thought. Maybe I'll be on a soapbox here for just a second. One of the things that really concerns me or really angers me, we were talking about kind of the, you know, general thoughts about, you know, going to counseling or what have you. I think as a society, we have really, really screwed the pooch on mental and emotional health. I think we're too dependent on pharmaceuticals. I think that we've done a really poor job of raising awareness about it. And it really pisses me off, honestly. And I hate that we're in the era that we're in, the information age, and we still have issues with people having, you know, judgments about what, you know, going to a counselor would be like. That just blows my mind. Because anybody that you've ever talked to, I mean, Darren, correct me if I'm wrong, you talk to anybody that's had experience with counseling, it's positive. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't ever run into somebody like, yeah, I tried counseling and God, that was a waste of time. I was dumb. No, you don't hear that.
No, you don't.
It's actually quite the opposite.
Yeah.
So how the hell have we gotten to a point where and correct me if I'm wrong, but I feel like, you know, issues with emotional and mental health are probably at an alarming all-time high. And yet we're still like, feels like in the Stone Ages in terms of our perception of it.
Even in today's day before all this in 2020, I think we've got more stress or stress.
Yeah, I was actually talking about prior to.
Yeah. I mean, you've got so many other things now that are bombarding you and coming at you, and we don't know how to switch it off or walk away from it. And we're just like glued to it. And I don't get it. I mean, people, you hire a coach for this, you hire a coach for that, you got a mentor for this. People are willing to have all these different coaches and everything. But if you can't focus and keep your brain healthy, that's absolutely one of the most important ones you need to go have around.
I think many years ago, unfortunately, somehow the brain was disassociated with the rest of the body. And so it was treated as a separate body part, as if it lived over there. So it has been a fight in the medical profession. And there's a word called pathology. And there's a level of folks or a portion of folks that will call it pathologized behavior. So that means that it's permanent, that it's forever, and we have to treat it that as such. There's also strengths-based approach, which is where many counselors come from. And we want to say you have these strengths and abilities within you, and skills are learnable. It's not something you can either do or not do.
Okay. So can I stop you there? Cause I want to make sure I understand this.
Sure.
So in the medical community, pathology is it generally
disease.
Okay. So is it something that is it, you know, learned? Like if you have bad experiences as a child, does it program you, or is it more physiological?
More physiological, but some people will put it in the learned behavior category. So like someone with bipolar disorder, mm-hmm, who has had several maladaptive coping skills is what they're called. When you make choices that are not healthy in a consistent way, you will say that's learned behavior and pathologize that behavior. But it's truly a seizure disorder. If you look at when someone's having a bipolar episode under a SPECT image that Dr. Amen has been able to really advocate for, you will see that all areas of the brain light up at the same time. It's called the ring of fire.
Wow.
And so the way I describe it, do y'all remember Frogger?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So if this way I imagine it. So if you can imagine a busy intersection with all the lights are green and you have to cross safely to the other side. Can you imagine doing that? Can you imagine going through an intersection with all the lights that are green?
And cars coming.
Not unless it was on a video game.
Exactly. Right.
So there's getting run over just means you start over.
Exactly. Splat. But that is what happens when a bipolar episode is happening. You have so many mixed signals going on through your brain.
So
but
the synapses are just super firing all over
all
the place
different areas of your brain. Yes. Wow. It's so if you can imagine, but it's a seizure. That's why we treat it with seizure medication. Wow. So, but the way the behavior manifests, it's like you spend too much, you get angry too quickly, you there's all kinds of different diagnostic checklists that you can meet to meet the criteria for bipolar disorder. Mm-hmm. But that's for instance where but some people will pathologize that. But then counselors, we want to figure out how to look at the strengths. Let's figure out how to get treatment. That's where pharmaceuticals do come in handy. We do need for the brain to be protected, but we want to figure out how to advocate. How do we get budgets down? How do we get you in a safe living environment? How do we try to prohibit drugs and alcohol to keep your brain safe? You know, different ways that we can advocate for the person, no matter what their diagnosis is, mm-hmm. their disorder is, that there's strengths that we can build to help people feel better.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
It does. And, you know, one of the things that I want to kind of switch gears and mm-hmm. talk about a little bit, because this is probably one of the most concerning parts of all of this since we started COVID pandemic craziness. It's kids. You know, I think I have three kids, you know, 11, 9, and 4. And, you know, they have been impacted by this. It's like, oh, a long vacation. But then, you know, you've got masks that they don't understand. They're hearing about COVID and coronavirus. And, you know, we got all this stuff that's coming at them, all these, you know, stimulants. And you know, I worry about our kids. And, you know, that was part of one of the reasons why I wanted to ask that question about when do you have the conversation? What do you need to be looking for? Because I'm watching my kids right now and I'm really worried. And the reason why I want to make this connection now, one of the things that concerns me the most is that at very impressionable ages, so I've got kids that are at those ages that are very impressionable, we're programming them to fear other human beings and we're programming them to fear in general, because that's what this whole thing has been about. You can't go out. You can't touch that. You can't, you have to have a mask. You can't breathe their breath. They could kill you. I'm worried about what's going to happen after this. What have we permanently programmed into tomorrow's adults?
2 out of 3 of your kids, I believe that's happening too.
Yeah. I mean,
your littlest one. I think he's oblivious to it. He's not going to not touch anything.
You actually pointed out an excellent point, though, because that is something about what pathologizing or problematizing what's happening with COVID and staying at home. That is a way to look at it. Mm-hmm. But Pollyanna Molly over here, and I will stick by that. But what we can do, my daughter is 8. So I talked to Haley about we wear the mask because we're trying to understand what's going on. We try to emotionally regulate. We try to make sense of something. Oh my gosh, COVID is terrible. Okay, there's a lot. Let's talk to him about the reality. There's a lot going on. We're not really sure what it's about. We have conversations that reduce anxiety by saying, let's have an open conversation. What are your concerns about it? What are you hearing? What is it that's upsetting you? Well, I'm worried you won't have a job, or what if we don't have money? Mm-hmm. Okay, that's important. Let's look at how we can make sure to take care of the family resources. How can we pitch in? I'm worried mommy and daddy are stressed out, you know? Okay, let's see how we can talk through that. You're noticing mommy's stressed out? Why don't we how can I help you have a conversation with her?
Let me ask you this.
Does that make sense what I'm saying?
How far do you go with talking to your children? How much do you tell them if you know?
Well, how much do they know?
Mom or dad are possibly going to lose their job if finances are really tight. Yeah.
I think it's a reverse conversation. I think you have that. You talk to them and let them tell you what they know or are perceiving or seeing. And then you kind of limit it from there. I mean, some people are wide open. You know, they're like,
sure.
Hey,
but I just want to know from your perspective, like, yeah, absolutely. What's healthy?
Yeah. Well, so what's healthy is really being able to have an open and honest lines of communication with your children as early as possible. So that when teen years strike, you have a much more likely chance to continue those open dialogue and conversations long past when COVID is in the rear view, because it will be one day. So we're looking from a strengths paper. Well, tell me about your concerns. Right. And one of the major issues in our relationships today is if I don't feel the same way, or if you don't feel the same way I feel, then there's a love bond issue. If we're not on the same page, air quotes, about an issue, then we have a problem with each other. And that's simply not the case.
No.
You can feel the way you feel. I can feel the way I feel. And I can recognize that you feel a way without having to get upset about it. So with our children, they're very concerned about COVID and wearing a mask.
Right.
Okay. Well, don't worry about it. Maybe you're laissez-faire about it. Other people must wear a mask, whichever way it is. We're just helping understand where the child is coming from. If they're like, I like wearing my mask. I feel good in my mask. Okay. Maybe the parent hates it, you know, but they're like, okay, well, that's good. Sure. You know, so you're really giving them a strengths-based approach, as long as it's healthy.
Right.
And most times kids, they're looking at the adults. So if a child is manifesting anxiety, yes, they can on their own, but a lot of times they're watching what we're doing and how we're reacting. We're panicking and we're not even aware of it, but the child can feel it.
And they hear it.
And they say it
too.
Well, let me give you a scenario.
Okay.
You know, so you got, you know, parents and they're worried about whoever the breadwinner is losing their job.
Mm-hmm.
And if that happens, we're going to have to move because we can't afford the house.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have that conversation with young, impressionable kids and tell them that that's a possibility? Or do you just wait until it happens and say, hey, guess what? We're moving. Like, how do you?
Great question.
How do you do that?
That's a great question. So what I heard is the parent has anxiety, and what the parent has decided to do, they're in anticipatory stress. That's what that's called.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're going down a line. A client gave me permission to use this, the parade of horribles. You're saying, okay, I'm going to lose my job. And then we're going to have to move, and then we're going to be sad, and then life is over. Okay. That's what your brain kind of goes to.
Sure.
Right. So now you're like, oh gosh, I got to brace the kids for this. That is one solution that you might have to sell your house, but that is not the only solution. And that's where counseling is a perfect opportunity to say, okay, my brain is telling me that if I lose my job, I'm going to have to sell the house, and then we're going to have to move, and then my kids are going to be upset, and I'm going to lose my marriage, and then we're going to go on all to this terrible place, okay? Mm-hmm. The counselor can validate those concerns and also help problem solve through what all of our options are and really advocate for the healthiest version. So we might say, well, if mommy and daddy lose a job, we'll get through it together because we're a family. As long as we're together, everything's going to be okay. And you teach your child, hey, as long as I'm with my family, I'm okay. And that's really what they want to hear. That's really what children need, is safety reinforced over and over and over and over.
Mm.
Make sense?
It does. And it's really powerful because I mean, obviously in real estate, we're seeing this. We're already seeing people that, you know,
it's happened,
job loss, I got to sell the house.
So,
you know, that kind of stuff is already happening. But I know people that will shield their kids because they feel like they're protecting them by not giving them bad news.
Mm-hmm.
But what I hear you saying is have open and honest dialogue and, you know, just really reinforce what matters. Because I think one of the things that I think is challenging about this whole situation right now is we tend to get caught up on the thing. What was the event? The
activating
event. We get caught up on
stressor.
That.
Mm-hmm.
We think about that and we're
losing,
like,
the house. For
I'm
going to
lose the house. And
my beer glass is almost empty. Yes.
Right.
My stressor.
So focused on that, yet failing to step back and say, my family's
not about it. Yeah.
We're healthy. We've been in worse places before.
So what do you think activates that part of concentrating on the house alone and all the terror that comes along with losing it?
I don't know. You're going to tell me because you're
am.
The pro.
I am.
She's, that's her hand where is clenching. The duress. She's getting rid of him. Boom.
Yes. So then you're back in fight, flight, freeze, or fright. Mm-hmm. So people who leave the house, they might say, well, we'll just leave the house behind and start over. Others are like, I'm going to die on this hill for the house. You know, so just right. whatever happens, right? And so then the kid, you know, it's just very stressful. So that's where, again, a counselor can help you engage executive functioning, be there to help you feel all the feels that you feel. Mm-hmm. And think all the things you can think and then put them together in a sensible package to form a trajectory, an alliance with your partners or your friends and family and your children to move forward. You know, this can happen with the loss of a spouse, not just divorce, not just loss of a job. I mean, we're dealing with all kinds of grief hell right now.
We are.
Right. And we always will.
So. Yeah, it's interesting because one of the things that early on when all this stuff started to hit, like go back to March and we had no idea. And when the lockdown started, like our pipeline just went boom. Yeah. I mean, it was like a bowling ball falling off a table.
Crisis.
We didn't know it was going to happen. But, you know, first of all, I did not watch the news. Mm-hmm. I don't want that shit in my head because it was just nonstop 24 hours a day of, you know, negative garbage.
Your
so
kids
turn
would be
that off.
Thrilled to live out of that fifth wheel. Come on. They would have a blast.
It'd be so fun.
But you know what I thought about? Because, you know, again, you're worried about, gosh, I've worked all my life to get to this point. And the one thought that occurred to me was, okay, so what if things go way sideways and the business turns upside down and we got to sell our place and all this? I started to think about the first house that my wife and I owned, which was a little postage stamp built in 1950. I mean, it was like
cute. Precious newlyweds.
We did some work to it to make it, you know, halfway
easy
acceptable.
To clean every day, though, wasn't
absolutely.
It?
Absolutely. Like, tiny house done. Nation.
But you know what? I thought back to that time. I'm like, I was no less happy then than I am now.
Right.
So fuck it. What does it matter?
What do you mean?
And it started to really
perspective. Get my
right. I was like, perspective is what matters right now. Mm-hmm. We're all healthy. You know, if shit hits the fan, we're still going to be together. We'll get through it.
I need a kitchen, a porch, and a bed. And what else? And a shitter. And that's it. Sorry.
Some Lime Creek and some whiskey. And I'll there be you fine. Go. Yeah.
And this remote control.
But that's really what I started to think about. Point. And I forced myself to think about that perspective a lot in the beginning when I didn't know what was going to happen, when I was really worried that, geez, this could be, you know, pretty severe because no idea.
Well, the question added onto yours, and I think part of it, and maybe I didn't hear it right, was, do you tell the kids what you're thinking, what could happen, or do you wait until it actually happens? I mean, do you want to put that kind of stress on your children? Like, hey, times are hard. Well, this might happen. And then your kids are like, what? And you're like, but it'll be okay. We'll take care of you. And they're like, I don't think so. But do you, I mean, they got enough to deal with at that point in time. Do you really want to load that on them? Or do you wait until, okay, now it really happened. And then you go, hey, kids, guess what? Here's what happened. Here's how we're going to deal with it. And you have a plan and you spell it out for them. And that's when you make them feel safe. You know, I think they feel safer instead of dropping that bomb of if this could, maybe here's what will happen.
So it depends. And it's never as simple as the dialectics this way or that way. Okay. And that's how a lot of us think. That's an important term called dialectics.
Okay.
Where two things can be true at the same time.
Not the same thing opposite. As Dianetics.
So part of it is dialectics.
Like this IPA. It's bitter and sweet.
Correct.
It's dialectic.
So Wise Mind says...
I like dialectic beers.
Yes.
Thank you for educating me.
So it depends on the temperament of your child. If what we were talking about initially, as I understood it, is the child is bringing anxiety maybe to you or that they may be showing that. I think it's important to also think that we're talking about how to teach our kids how to deal with conflict.
Okay.
So we could do the empathy exercise to say, how would I feel if this happened to me? So if something caught me off guard and said, hey, by the way, we lost the house and we're moving, that might catch somebody off guard and it might stress them out.
Right.
So we may not want to do that to our children in that way. We may do that. It depends on how, but seeing it as a problem-solving, conflict management, difficult conversation opportunity, that's the way to do it from a strengths-based. How will we get through it? And you can even have these entertaining conversations when the stress level is down. Mm-hmm. Not right now. When the stress level is down, you say, what would you think about moving someday?
Do you, with multiple children or
offspring? You know,
offspring. Well, when you, I mean.
What the hell was that? Children or?
Well, I was thinking multiple.
Oh, and
I was thinking
there's a lot two, of grinding
two
going
or
on.
More.
You're stewards of children, the children that you're stewards of in anyway, your community.
What mm-hmm. You ever sit down with those family meetings growing up? We're going to have a family meeting. You
nope.
Never had those?
Nope.
Okay.
I was in a dictatorship.
I'm sorry.
It did not matter.
We're going to sit down and have family
maybe
orders.
That's why, maybe that's why that. I'm partial to conversations. Maybe,
yeah, it wasn't necessarily everybody get to share. It was what's going to happen, but we're all in one place to do it. Yeah. But, you know, you have a family meeting. Mm-hmm. I guess it depends on the family and how open you are with all the kids, but sometimes you wouldn't want to. You're going to deal with each child individually because they are individuals. And there might be one child that you can be open with about that.
Right.
And because they're able to understand, you may have another one who gets a little more anxious. So you can't treat your kids all the same.
Correct.
But now in 2020 with what's happening, is it the same things we should be paying attention to with other adults, or are there different ways that we should be paying attention to our kids to understand that they're kind of stressed out right now as well?
I'm so glad you brought that up. Children, when they're going through a traumatic issue, especially from 0 to 8, that's where we have a lot of play therapists in the area, but children resolve their issues through play. So if you have a 2, 3, or 4-year-old, you might listen to them when they're playing in their own atmosphere and hear what their topics of conversation are mm-hmm. and just gently interject and collaborate with those conversations. So if they're like this bear and this bear, you know, oh no, we're running out of money. We need to cut up the credit cards. Then you might want to say am I talking about credit cards a lot? If you hear a lot of curse words coming out of your child's mouth, all of a sudden you're like, huh, where's this coming from? So
this beer loves whiskey.
Exactly.
Daddy Darren, look.
My dad's favorite food is beer. Exactly. Oh, Amazon, Scout and Seller's here again. So
baby cup yeah. cooked me a beer out of the fridge.
Yeah. So, but they do so show signs of distress. And again, you're going to see a change in behavior. So a child that's normally somewhat go with the flow, if all of a sudden they're terrified about masks, or again, a lot of times it's with the parent or their safe person. So that could be any kind of caregiver, mm-hmm. could be a babysitter, a nanny, it could be a teacher, and they get terrified that something terrible will happen to them. That is a wonderful time to say, hey, I really heard you. What I heard you say is you're very terrified.
Yeah.
Using their words that they might use, or sometimes boys or girls can become very physically aggressive, you know, some biting if a child is having difficulty expressing verbally. So you might encourage them, hey, write it down or draw me a picture. You know, don't make them be verbal if they're struggling with their verbal. Mm-hmm. If they're showing physical expressions of stress, most or a lot of the times, it's because they can't articulate what they're feeling.
You said that 0 to 8. What about the yeah. little?
Yeah, the tweens. I mean, yeah, John, absolutely. I mean,
Jake's got a 9 yeah. and 11 year old.
Those are depending again on their maturity levels / their
your
conversation
kids,
with them. Yeah, absolutely. Then you probably have a completely open conversation with them. So actually, you know, our children are typically wiser beyond our years.
They are.
I highly recommend The Conscious Parent by Dr. Shefali Tesabri, as well as Love and Logic, and as well as Power Your Parenting.
Those are
three immediately. Those resources that are amazing with parent resources to Love and Logic. I mean, it will literally give you dialogue scenarios, trainings.
Love and Logic. What was the other one?
Dr. Shefali Tesabri. She's the conscious parent.
I'll take your word. Yeah. That's how you pronounce
the conscious
your
parent.
Conscious parent.
And then Colleen O'Grady does Power Your Parenting, very specific with mother-daughter relationships.
Power Your
very,
Parenting.
Very, very, very great okay. resources.
So let me, I want to share something with you. My thoughts is
I love teenagers, by the way. So I love working with teenagers.
And I want to get to that. So. But with my own kids, one of the things that I have, right, wrong, or indifferent, and it's just a simple guy thinking about it. One of the things that I've thought is really important from the beginning was I can't be overly stressed. I can't be unhealthy around the kids. And so from the beginning, my focus has been, okay, so if we get served a shit sandwich and life is a total, you know, cluster and maybe we lose a house, how can I be okay with that? Which is why I started thinking about perspective early on, because we've talked to our kids about it. Like, hey, there's a lot going on with this thing. We don't know. A lot of things could happen, you know, or business could, you know, crumble. But listen, we're good because we've got each other, and whatever happens, we're going to have a lot of fun. And we've really tried to focus on just, hey, it's fine. We're good.
You all are going to share one bedroom. We're going to rent out these. We're going to have distant relatives who you've never met before come stay in these other bedrooms.
And I even had the conversation.
We can work with a counselor to figure out how to say that in a more eloquent, palatable way for children.
How to say it
so they're not renters.
Like Darren. Right.
They're not renters who are keeping the ship from sinking.
But I even remember having a conversation with my 9-year-old daughter where she was asking me questions because I told her, like, it's all, you know, we're going to be fine and we're going to be happy and all this stuff. And she asked me, she's like, what if this happened and what if that? And I told her, I said, you know, when we go camping in our little camper, how fun is that? Oh my God, it's the most fun ever. I said, so, if we get a smaller house somewhere, it might even be more fun than this. And we still have each other, and that's what matters. And she gave me a big hug. But from the beginning, my focus has been like, it's like when you get on the airplane, they tell you, put your mask on before you help your kids or somebody that needs assistance. Like, I got to take care of me. Mm-hmm. So they see me being okay with it. Cause they're already nobody's okay with not going places. Mm-hmm. It's freaking wearing on everybody. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
How do we make the best of it? Or how do we get through it?
They just need to see me leading by example, saying it's, yes, this is weird. Kids know this is not normal.
What, you leading by example?
No, COVID, you knucklehead. But they need to see me okay with it. Am I?
And I really, really like that. Sort of looping around with your friends. How are you talking to your kids about this? And that's where they might go, I'm buckling, or I don't know, or I'm so stressed. That's a great way to maybe also lead into, because we really want the adults in the situation. I know it should go unsaid, but for many, many generations, the child has been responsible for getting themselves regulated while the adult continues to do what they're doing. So it's very important for the adult to make sure that they seek wise counsel.
So kids do what? Children regulate themselves.
Yeah. In other words, like, don't cry. Get yourself together. Oh, that's enough. You know, the child needs to present in a certain way, needs to regulate themselves while the adult has more important things going on. And so it's acceptable for them to have these issues and difficulty.
So it's okay for them to cry uncontrollably and have tantrums and all that. Just let them go to town on it.
Exactly. But the child is expected to button it up. That's enough. We've heard you out.
Now let me throw my fit.
Exactly. Exactly. Right. So
you can go have your tantrum in the bottom of the pool. How about that?
And I was also noticing there's
or on the yellow line. I mean, what the hell, Darren?
Right. There's a technique called joining, which is really cool. When your daughter's sent, you're saying everything's going to be fine, right? And she's saying, but what if? So she has a little bit of anxiety from her genetics, but so you're helping her understand.
She's actually drawing it out from Jake. She's the really mature one of the two in the conversation.
What she's asking you to do is
interesting. She was taking notes in that conversation and I wasn't. So you might be right.
She's
like going on 16 at the age of 9. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. She's asking you to, it's called joining, to say when she's saying, but what if? Yeah, but what if? And you're saying, you know what? It sounds like it's just really important for me to just hear you out. I want to hear what you're worried about. Just lay it on me. I can handle it.
Sure.
And then it just gives her the open season to just And you might be like, I can't believe she's wearing, oh God, so what she wasn't worried about. But you're just allowing her to speak her truth. You're not interjecting. You're not saying everything will be fine. You're not saying everything's terrible or don't think like that. Nothing. You're just allowing a person to emote.
So you're joining into her conversation.
Correct. Yes. Got very good.
Mm-hmm. Perfect. Yep.
What's so crazy about the whole pandemic and all the stuff that's gone along with it, masks and I want to give you guys an example, which completely shocked me. So, you know, the ages of my kids, I already disclosed that. They love anything amusement parks. It's like their favorite thing in the world. And, you know, we get season passes to Six Flags every year and they love going. And I'm like, oh, whatever, but they love it. So, okay, we'll take them. And we do. We try to take them as much as we can. Well, Six Flags recently reopened, but they have restrictions. In the park, you have to wear a mask and there's all kinds of things that you have to do. So we actually posed the question to the kids like, hey guys, Six Flags is open. Do you want to go? And we told them you have to wear a mask after this. We went through the guidelines with them. We said, do you want to go or do you want to wait until it's back to normal? And they're like, we want to wait. I was like, are you fucking kidding me? Like, of course me, I'm like, yes,
they want normal.
Oh, thank God. But I could not believe it. Like, it's the thing that hit me in that moment was they're not okay with the masks. They're not okay with things not being normal. It's enough of an impact on them that they don't want to go freaking ride roller coasters. What?
That's good.
That was shocking. Mm-hmm. Shocking to me. We have to understand how much we don't understand it. I think that kids understand it even less. They're like, wait a minute, what? I can't play with my friends. I can't.
I think they're probably more stressed than we are in a lot of ways. And that's the scary part about it. Because as you said, I mean, yanked out of school at first, it was okay. It's like, woohoo, don't have to go to school today. It's like a snow day. Yeah. And then all of a sudden it's like, mm-hmm. Well, now you're not going back to school at all.
Yeah.
What? And as we were talking to Carrie Brown, the social emotional. She had a clever term for it. They're not getting that. They're mm-hmm. not learning that as much anymore. And, you know, they've got other things. And then they feel our stress about, they're like, I mean, they're kind of in isolation all of a sudden. And they're going, you know, they're home most of the day, all day, every day, as you said. And we get to still kind of venture out. So yeah. I remember you, as Jake put it last week or a couple of weeks ago, when he was talking about taking the kids to Home Depot finally.
Yeah.
And they were like, yes, we get out of the house. We get to go away. Change of scenery. Mm-hmm. But the kids are locked up more than we are.
On the way there, it was like an episode of The Muppets in my back seat. There was like shit flying around. I mean, it was crazy. It's like,
forgot to ride in a car seat.
To Home Depot, guys. Like, calm down.
But
they got out of the house.
They've been isolated more than we have.
They have. You're right. Mm-hmm.
We get to leave.
You're right.
They are stuck there. Yeah. So, I mean, you said with the young ones, listen to them in their play conversations.
Yeah.
If they're aggressive, they have a little more aggressive mm-hmm. behavior.
Yeah.
What about the older kids? I mean, Jake's 9 and 11. I've got a 17 and 22-year-old, although she's what else are you looking for them?
Yeah. Are they feeling defeated? You know, it's one thing to be frustrated with it but if that's what's concerning, if they're isolating, if they're going into social media, I mean, that the biggest concern we have as counselors is, you know, the isolation already. And then if there's bullying going online, that can still be happening, even mm-hmm. though they're not in school, you know,
that might be a relief so much for of a the lot of kids though.
It I mean, really a positive
for some, yeah. They're like, whew, I don't have to deal with that shit every day.
Exactly. I've 100, you know, but for the people that are engaged in social media and they have an exorbitant amount of time, mm-hmm. Sort of unmatched amount Too of much. Time on social media without, you know, they may have some supervision, but a lot of them are having to parent, or, you know, watch themselves, you know, take care of meals or, I mean, just for practicality's sake.
You look at it, hence the reason you try to go out and buy a video gaming system right mm-hmm. now.
Forget
you
it.
You can't buy one.
You can't find one.
So it was like, how do I cope with my kids?
Yeah.
Guess what? We always said no, but you got a new Xbox. I mean, they're they're not. I mean, part of it's
and
production,
tablet time and all that like, stuff sort of out the window. So
take as much screen time as you want.
Know. I mean, you're asking like such great existential questions. You know, I don't. I definitely don't have a perfect answer for every scenario. What I would say though is it continues to go back to the conversation. Okay. Well, this is impacting me. I care about you. I want to know how it's impacting you. And I want, as best we can, foster the creative ideas that they have to interact. Mm-hmm. So if they're like, hey, I want to go to my girlfriend's house and we're going to sit outside in the cul-de-sac and we're going to, you know, whatever, socially distance, and you are friends with those parents and you can advocate for everybody being on the same page, whatever you can do. I saw some girls at Lake Peachtree and they were sitting in a great circle. It was a huge circle, but you could tell that they were connecting with each other. And I was just pleased to see that some kids are, you know, if they can drive, they're opening up their trunks and sitting in there and having their
own
space.
It's called tailgating.
Right. They're tailgating. Okay. Well, just listening to their creative solutions, because a lot of times we'll just say, well, you're just going to have to, again, we get so stressed out under duress. We're like, suck it up. Oh, you think it's bad for you? Look at what I'm having to deal with. Da, 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 da. And then we get in these fights and then it's not productive. And then we tear at these relationships and snowballs. And
well, if I could, one of the things that, there was several things that happened to me personally that led to me really wanting to do this conversation with you today. I've heard in my sphere, people that, you know, when we talk about older kids, teenagers, several examples recently of suicidal kids.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's shocking to me how quickly we can go from, you know, go back to February. I've got a socially awkward teenager that's, because being a teenager sucks. I mean, come on, guys.
Under
everybody, remember back to it. Jesus Christ, that was awful. That's like the worst
under
years
the
of your life.
Circumstances, you're right.
Like, it's just awful. Yeah, all those hormones, and it's terrible. Well, you take somebody that in February was socially awkward and dealing with stuff, and you're like, what do I do? And then this rapid onset of all this crazy stuff. 2 months later, your kid's being taken away because, you know, they either tried to commit suicide or talked about it with somebody and they got 1013'd. Is that,
do you know what that means?
Yeah. That's the right number, right?
It's called an involuntary hold.
Right. So they get taken away to a facility. I've heard this so many times recently. It's shocking.
Well,
in my own sphere.
As you said, now they have too much time. And so they're trying to fill that gap. They're home or been pulled out of school or whatever, and that which takes up most of their day. Now they have all this extra time and it's like, what do I do with my time? And they may start venturing out online to other places just because it's like, let me go look over here. Let me go look over there. And then, you know, it's like, well, here's an emo group. Oh, wait, now here's this. And I don't want to say the words. I hate them. But here's this other group of people who all feel bad, but it's a collective bad. And then here's another group of collective worse bad. And somebody like you're talking about, you know, and it escalates and they're out there and we don't know what the hell's going on with them. And all our, you know, while they're home, they have a less extra time. So now they're venturing into these other spots. Well, I don't feel so good right now. As you said, I'm feeling pretty bad. I'm cooped up at home. I don't know how to process it. I can't talk to my parents quite as well as I want to. So here's my newfound friends, or here's an idea I have, as we do, like when we're, you know, WebMD, when we have one thing, oh, I got an ailment, boom, boom, boom. And they put in something, a thought or a feeling, and all of a sudden takes them down a rabbit hole. And now they get sucked into something what Jake's talking about.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me ask this, because everything that we've talked about so far up to this point would apply to teenagers, like looking for changes. When you talk to them, that's, you know, right, the dialogue with kids, all that stuff applies. What I want to know is, as a parent, when do you know, or a friend or family member, you know, if there's somebody that you love and care about that's in that age range, how do you know? How do you know if somebody is approaching being suicidal? I have no idea. Like, what is it conversation? If so, how do you have the conversation? Like, what is it?
You know, a lot of these kids that are even high performing let's just say they're used to getting straight A's. They're very competitive. They're in sports. They kind of stretch themselves pretty thin, actually, for people, but we don't really see it that way. They get a lot of reward from performance, and now school has been shut down. Grades are in jeopardy. Don't know how it's going to impact college, just everything. Their parents could be coming home and just saying, you know, you think you're stressed out. You got, you know, a lot of dismissive parts, not intentionally, but it does happen. Right. And then all of a sudden we lose these children to suicide. We talk a lot about depression and suicide. We don't talk nearly as much about impulse behavior disorders such as anxiety. There's a 5,000% greater in chance of suicidal action by someone who has anxiety
versus depression.
Correct. Because depresses the system. So yes, it happens with depression, but anxiety can compulse you to do it. So anybody who has obsessive or compulsive or perfectionism or fear of failure, a lot of that worthlessness, and it catches us by surprise. We don't think to check on those kids, the ones who have it all, you know, or what have you. We have, that's on one extreme. We have the other extreme of children who are now in the hands of their abusers because they're stuck at home.
Yeah, we've heard that way too much. It's escalated. I mean,
we've got other people that we know in our group that are seeing the cases of neglect and abuse that are just skyrocketing. You might hear parents that are stressed out, and children, they're egocentric people, and that's not an insult. Right. That's how we're actually built. And so they may say, just like what an older person might say, I'm better off, I'm causing my parents and my family too much stress. So if I just weren't here, then they could be okay. They wouldn't have to pay for me. Those overly empathic, they're called highly sensitive persons or children, really paying attention, like this, going ahead and calling out and saying, this is stressful.
Well let me saying it. So you've seen this in a couple different ways, and I'm helping Jake here because he's expressed this to me. You're talking about teenagers as well. And you've also had an adult acquaintance, the same thing. So who had
and our life is touched by it now
within a couple within the past month and a half.
Sure.
So he's seeing a lot of effect from this based on the folks that he's been around, and he has a large sphere of people that he's in contact
with. It's hard to talk about.
Well, let me go back, right? So all those things you're expressing, they can manifest in, you know, just disorder, right? So if you talk about the fear of failure, somebody that's a high performer and they're out of school, they could be feeling a heightened sense of anxiety right now and fine. But do we know, like, is there a line when all of a sudden it's like, ooh, this is now enough of a problem where we're worried about suicide? Or is it just really not well understood?
It's not well understood. I mean, if I could give you, I mean, we would solve it. Immediately when we started talking about COVID, all of us in the profession, not all, but I mean, all of my peers were like, oh shit, I'm so scared to see the statistics after.
Sure.
And I'm hearing just over and over and over people who you would quote unquote never think. And I'm glad you're bringing this up. People don't go to counseling typically until about 2 years post-crisis. For a marriage lives, a lot of shit has gone down. Their addictions have gotten worse. Their anxiety has gotten terrible. Their depression has taken over. And there's usually an activating event that has happened. So, I mean, we're already in that stress level. What I would like for us to say is, instead of sort of waiting to have some of these conversations until we're like, oh gosh, is everybody okay? Let's go ahead and figure out how to meld them into our daily lives, not necessarily are you suicidal or are you thinking about harming yourself, but it's like, how are you handling the stress that's happening right now?
If only we treated our emotional health like we did our cars.
Exactly.
Right?
Maintenance.
Here's a great example.
No, it's not a great example. No. Because there's a lot of people just...
Jared, frankly, to drop a bomb of knowledge on you, okay? So shut your face.
I just drove an extra 7,000 miles after that little red light came on but changed your oil.
Let me make the analogy.
Your anxiety sufferers are not going to do that.
Let me make the analogy for you. In our car, we're driving, and all of a sudden, there's a noise. Something starts knocking. and we take it somewhere to have it checked out. We don't wait until we're dead on the side of the road to go, oh, well, that's shit, you. I guess I should probably have this. Well, no.
That's you.
No,
there's
no,
no. A lot of people.
Well,
because I know.
Okay, so no. Generally,
how many people have you been around and you've asked them? You're like,
Frank,
so
how long, face.
Okay, how long has this been going on? It's like, I've been driving around for about 2 weeks with it. I'm like,
yes, oh, but so let me get back to my point.
Your tie rod.
Most people do not wait till they're broke down on the side of the road to take it somewhere, right? They're.
But how many people hope that it won't happen?
I get that. But my point is,
those are the people that work
goes away.
I know. But my point is,
it'll go away.
Shut up, Darren. I'm trying to make a damn point. My point is, with our cars, we are okay. There's a symptom.
Yes.
Get it in the shop. Mm-hmm. Don't wait till it doesn't work anymore or it's blown up and then you take it to the junkyard.
Right.
And it's the same thing with our mental health. It's like, don't wait until the damn thing's blown up. You know, as soon as you start to see symptoms, that's when, like, you don't wait until, oh gosh, well, you know what? This has been going on for a couple of years. And now, you know, Johnny, my teenager, boy, he's really depressed. So we're thinking about taking him somewhere. You heard the noises in the engine years ago.
Right.
Like, that's the time. Don't wait till, you know, there's steam coming out of the engine on the side of the road and it's not running.
And a lot of parents who deal with anxiety and depression, bipolar, PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, they hope their children won't have these genetic issues. Okay. Or addiction. A lot of our teenagers, I mean, we're not talking about that. Addiction kills a lot of our kiddos.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we got people that are taking some pills, doing some things, and we're losing them. That's like, it's just a terrible,
right,
but
there.
A lot of times it's because they're trying to get relief from the symptoms inside. So, or escape from the world. And so,
well, learning to always, I always told my girls this, and whoever I've been, you know, even their mother and everyone else, it's like, listen, I'm going to blow off some steam from time to time. In a way, I'll just sit there and I'll be like, blah, 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 blah. And they're like, are you mad? I'm like, no, but I'm just kind of irritated. So I'm vocalizing it over here. I'm not talking directly at anybody. It might've been about the day or whatever. And it's like, I said, it's like a balloon. You keep blowing that balloon up, and if you don't let air out of it, it's going to pop. So just let me let my air out. I'll be fine. Even if it was with the kids, it's like, yeah, I might be yelling at you a little bit or raising my voice and I'm frustrated, but that's a good thing because give me 2-3 minutes. I'm going to get through, let that top of the air off so the balloon doesn't explode, and then we can have a conversation about it. Right now, I'm just going to do this. And I think that's kind of the same thing, what Jake is saying, that if this balloon keeps filling up and they don't know how to let it out, or you don't teach them, or you take them to a mental health counselor or somebody who can help them to let that air out, that's when they explode.
Absolutely. And you know what I love that you said that you did with your kids? You told them what you were doing. It's beautiful, Darren. I mean, when we have dads like you two out there, I mean, I cannot imagine how much better this world would be.
Oh, thank
and,
you.
And, you know, my husband's among that count too. So I just really, really appreciate that not only did you went ahead and expressed in that way, but you also told them, this is not about you. The love is not taken. I'm showing you a way that I can cope. And they're saying, oh, okay. This is how daddy copes. This isn't anything to do with disappointment or failure or disapproval. Daddy's telling me that he's got some steam to blow off and that the love and you're informing. Those are the conversations there. I couldn't have said it more beautifully. That's why these conversations are so amazing for counselors, for everybody in the community. When we just sit around and talk like this, we're like, hey, what are you doing to coach your children? What are you doing to coach your children? And we all learn that way.
Yeah.
This is where these beautiful conversations and these outcomes come from. There's somebody on this listening to this podcast right now that is changing their relationships with their children right now because of what you guys are doing actively with your children. I mean, I couldn't ask for better podcast host.
Wow.
Appreciate that.
Yeah. Okay. Have you seen us drink whiskey together? It's actually quite ugly.
As long as I'm not in that number,
we do have our weaknesses.
I have to go check the thermostat for a different reason.
Yes. But let me ask you something, though.
Yeah.
One of the things that concerns me is I hear a lot of families that get in these places where they can't communicate. And you can even see it. Like, you'll see a family go to dinner. They'll all be at the table. Nobody talks. And I worry about those families that have gotten into a rut where they don't talk. They can't talk. Mm-hmm. The dialogue's not healthy. Mm-hmm. So if somebody's listening and they're like, oh my gosh, I'm in that place where I don't know how to talk to my husband or my wife, or I don't know how to talk to my kids. How do you start? Because that's tough, right?
It's tough. However, amazing that we have the Gottman Institute. You can friend them on Facebook. They have a new book out, and they were on my bucket list, John and Julie Gottman. I got to meet them in Atlanta a year ago in March, and it was just fantastic. But Gottman started off, he was married and got divorced and has spent the last 45 years studying couples in the Love Lab in Seattle, Washington. And he met his wife. Yes, that's what's called, the Love Lab. And he measures it with neuroscience.
That sounds really kinky.
Yes, it could possibly be. Well, he'll talk about sex. It's okay to talk about sex. It's okay.
Yes.
In a healthy way. So, but I love him because he has a concept and a philosophy called the Sound Relationship House. And he literally, there are seven steps. It's called Seven Principles to Making Marriage Work. It's like $7 to $15. You can find it in any form, Audible to paperback to probably go to your half price book. It's amazing. It's a gold standard. And they also have a new book called 8 Dates. So it literally lays out what you have to do is for you and your partner. There's a concept called radical acceptance. That means just today, we're just going to go ahead and say, we want to connect. That's it. And now you have the framework to say, we want to connect. Let's get the 8 Dates book from the Gottmans and let's follow that. Let's go on 8 dates. And that doesn't mean you have to go physically out in public, but it does mean that the two of you spend time together and use this as a framework to have these conversations to connect.
Is that like the 12-step equivalent to admitting you have an issue? Because here's what I see.
I like that. I've never thought of it that way. I really like that.
You see a family that gets to this point, because I've seen this many times, and luckily my family's not at this point. But you see these families that at one point, beautiful interaction, they were really close. And then life happens, and it's like this slow process that over time, and then they get locked in this place where they don't communicate well. They're at each other's throats, and it's just, and I think one of the things that's the hardest for them is just to admit, like, man, we screwed up a good thing. Mm-hmm. We all screwed it up. And I think if you can collectively sit, like, in a safe way, going back to one of the first things you said, okay, so we messed this up and it's okay.
Mm-hmm. And talking about, believers, say, hey, I believe in the reason why I took my vows. And going back to basics, to saying, let's get this pyramid back in order where we put, God on top, and then we have the couple and then the children.
By the way, Molly, now you see that Darren actually does pee on the show. You've heard this many times, but does he pee on the show?
During.
Yeah. No. That, just to clarify, folks, he doesn't pee on the show. He pees the show.
Do you have a bag?
So I didn't. No one was hurt in this.
It gives everybody
recording
a
of
break
this,
from so. Me for a little bit. You can decompress a little.
But going back,
So
if you're a believer and you believe in your vows,
That's one way to just again. Where are my values? Mm-hmm. I have decided that I'm going to humble myself and say I want to stay in this thing. Mm-hmm. And I'm also able to say that I have probably contributed to problems in this relationship, and go from there. The thing that just gets me to my core, I've been married 10 years with Jason 16 and a half. And the thing that gets me is if I hadn't been a counselor, I'm terrified to think that I may not have known that these resources existed.
Sure.
Because it's like they're hidden somewhere. They're not. They're everywhere. Mm-hmm. But they do seem like when you're in those terrible places with a partner, that there is no help. You've thought it all the way through. You've tried everything, quote unquote, and there's no saving you. And all the while, there's people out there that are begging to help you, want to help you, because we've seen it work in our own lives and we've seen it work for so many people. We have data to back it up. It's not a bunch of bullshit like y'all go love on each other and blah, 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 blah. This is science. If you're into that, I mean, this is really pulling in hardcore research to help people.
So I have a theory.
Yeah.
When I think about families that are at that place where they're really struggling to communicate and connect, I think a lot of it comes from defense. And I'm curious to get your thoughts on this, but the most interesting thing that the wisdom of life has thrown my way, you know, as I've gotten older and I've really learned and accepted, the people we love the most hurt us the most. And the reason is because we've got so much invested.
And vice versa.
Right. Exactly.
That's where that's the biggest mind shift set that I can offer you today. Is not that they hurt you. It's so how have I hurt them?
Mm-hmm. Well, that's,
and when we look at the accountability now, checkmate at the same time, what I do want to say is when people come to this realization, it can be so devastating that that's what can prompt hopelessness.
Activating event.
Correct. Very good. Very
See,
good.
I'm learning.
I'm loving it. So I want to be very, very clear that this is not your fault.
Yes, exactly.
And it is going to be okay. And there are people that love and care about you and want to help you.
I'll give you an example. You know, you walk past somebody that you don't know and you give them eye contact and a smile and they just kind of look away. Yeah. Like, yeah, whatever. But one of the people you love the most, if you walk in the front door and you look at them and you smile and they don't, it hurts.
It's called turning away. Gottman talks about that.
And even if it's like, I was thinking about something and I wasn't even, you walked in the door and I was in another place. There was no malintent, but the receiver of that action got really hurt.
Yeah. What is it? Turning?
Turning away or turning towards. It's a bid to connect. And so whenever we have these bids to connect, so you're like, OMG, I totally love this color paint on the wall. And you're just like, oh my gosh. Oh, if you would just talk about race cars, then we could talk.
I like Pepto-Bismol too, but I don't want it on the wall.
It's not Pepto-Bismol. It's Flamingo. Why can't you get it right? You know?
Yeah, but how
and then
do you
next
fix
thing
that?
You know, yeah, that, yeah. The next thing you know, something that you were so excited about, and we can watch it. You're like, oh my gosh, I'm so excited to have this experience. And your partner's like, oh, that again?
Whatever.
That's called a turn away. So when a person puts themselves out there to connect with you, and this is where you hear the old fashioned, kicking the dog syndrome. Mm-hmm. So that's what we do is we give the world our best. And then other people in our family, a lot of times our extended family, and then we come home and they get the leftovers, your children and your loved ones, and sometimes your best friends, mm-hmm. because they will love you no matter what. That is no excuse. We need to flip that paradigm around to say, you come first, you know, source comes first. So I have overflow for my family.
Mm-hmm.
And then what's going on with the rest of the world?
Well, I'll take it a step further. It can even be more insidious with the people that we love the most. It can manifest itself in a way where, you know, here's a hypothetical. I had something positive happen at my work or my business. And when I came home, I expected when I walked in the door that my husband and my kids were going to walk in and say, hey, great job. And I walked in and that didn't happen. And all of a sudden now I'm disappointed and hurt and everybody. And it's not that maybe they planned on saying something later, or they were going to express their appreciation for what you did in another way, but it didn't happen the way I wanted it, the way I thought it was going to happen. Now I'm hurt. Like a total stranger, you could give a shit, but somebody that you really love and care about, all of a sudden now you're crushed.
Right.
And everybody is like, oh shit, what happened? I I don't even know what I did.
Oh, mm-hmm. It's a good thing Mr. Winnie's not here. You know what he'd tell you? Suck it up, Buttercup. Suck it up, Buttercup.
Yes. That was my mom. Right. Suck it up, Buttercup.
Yeah, no,
that,
which is not the right response. Yeah.
Which is why he's not a therapist.
And well, it's interesting. It's interesting you say that. That happens one time. We can get over it.
Right.
That happens as a pattern in your relationship. That's called contempt. That's where contempt comes. You build resentment. You start looking for ways that your partner's letting you down. Criticism. You're finding a problem with something mm-hmm. your partner's doing and everything that they do. Stonewalling. I'm just not going to talk to you tonight. I'm not going to. Defensiveness. Well, you should have done this and da 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 da. Those are called the four horsemen of the apocalypse from John Gottman.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
Those are predictors for relationships falling apart. Same with between you and your children.
Well, I used to do
exactly.
the same thing.
Like when I would come home. Mm-hmm. Back when I wore a tie and and it come home. But it was one of those things. I wanted to be able to give everybody my undivided attention, but I needed that shift. I needed that
decompression stage.
Right. And it was, and you know, the kids would be like, Dad, you're home. It's great. Boom. And they were so excited. And I was like, I wasn't there yet. And they would come up, give me hugs and want to tell me about their day. I hadn't switched gears. I was still in finishing up work mode, switching to family mode. And so I had actually talked to my wife at that time and I told her, I said, just do me a favor. When I come in, I'm just mm-hmm. going to come in. I need to go change my clothes, take my tie off, take my watch off, get it into home mode. And after that, when you see me walk back out, I'm ready to go. I'm dad, I'm husband, I'm everything you need now or should need. And in that little bit of transition time made a huge difference because my girls didn't feel any disappointment, like dad didn't hear what I was trying to say or he wasn't excited to see us, which I was thrilled. But man, I would just walk in, go straight to the bedroom, change, come out, and it was like, boom. And then it's like, Dad, and I'm like, here I am. You got me.
Yeah.
That's wonderful. And I'm glad that you understood that. A lot of people don't have, it's called insight. Awareness is the first part. Am I doing something? Insight. Why am I doing it? Behavior. What do I want to do about it? Okay.
Sure.
So you're showing I'm aware that I'm doing it. I know why I'm doing it. And here's what behavior change we can make. And so that's an agreement and a collaboration. And yeah. that becomes the culture of your family where you say, I have this need that needs to be met. This is about me. This isn't about you. This mm-hmm. is about me. I would like to explain it. Can I get your buy-in? And the answer is almost always yes, because we want our other person to be happy.
Right. Communication is a key, right? Because yeah. I'm a firm believer the difference between expectation and reality is disappointment.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so if I'm expecting somebody, you know, I'm expecting my kids to do this and they do this,
mm-hmm.
or I expect my spouse to react this way and they react this way, that, mm-hmm. you know, in the further that divide, the more disappointed I am in that, mm-hmm. as you said, habit over time.
Any date that you went on?
There's a lot of disappointment. I mean, it just is what it is. Sorry, ladies. It is just what it is. That disappointment over time, you get to this place where you've gotten so far off track, you don't really know how to find your way back. And that's really what my whole point was. I know there's a lot of families, because here's the thing, again, going back to some of the things that led us to this conversation today, I know in my sphere, my close sphere, I know people that are getting divorces
mm-hmm.
since COVID. In talking to them, it's like the problems were amplified during lockdown, or working at home, kids at home, all of a sudden these problems got amplified. And it went from healthy marriage, or what they thought was healthy marriage, who knows if it was or not, to okay, lockdown. And then a couple months later, divorce.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not talking about that as a society. You know, we worry about people dying from COVID, which we could get into that because it's a whole separate conversation, but all these other impacts from the actions we've taken, nobody's talking about divorce. I think freaking divorce attorneys are going to be so jacked busy over the next 6 to 12 months.
Oh, and they have been.
Oh,
it is
gosh.
Hard. And there's no laws preventing how many times you right. can go back to court and you just watch the power struggle shred a family.
Have you seen an uptick in your
absolutely
practice, which is great. I'm glad.
Well, both ways.
Which it should.
Both ways.
What do you mean?
So in divorce and staying together. So when I honestly, when a divorce happens, when they, a couple decides to separate, it's literally heartbreaking because I'm if there's something that's just irreconcilable and that does happen, I still want to figure out how to foster. You're related to each other no matter if you're divorced or not. Mm-hmm. So figuring out, especially if you have minor children, but it doesn't matter if you have adult children, it's very important to figure out how to keep that genealogy healthy.
But I mean, overall, not, just in that sphere.
Then you
but
have like other ones coming in.
Every aspect as an individual.
Oh, I'm sorry,
this whole, during this whole 2020, I'm hoping that you've seen an increase in people have reached out to you for help.
Not yet.
Okay, people, get out there.
Not yet, because you're going to acute stress because we're in the middle of
it. As you said, it comes way, it usually comes after instead of the stress.
That's during. Right. So right now we're still in the soup.
Okay.
Now there is a little bit of an uptick because of that first round of COVID kind of. We made it through, but now it's ramping back up. So there were people that started this summer to access support.
You know,
but
now that the new stimulus check is coming out and they can ride it a little longer, they can even prolong it before they come see you.
Well, and I hate to break that stigma, but with Ambetter, they don't, their behavioral health support is not there. So there's so many people that do not have good mental health coverage, behavioral health coverage.
It's awful.
But I will tell you that there is a thing called federally qualified health centers that a lot of people don't know about.
Never heard of it.
FQHC.org. FQHC.org.
Okay.
And it's across the United States and our taxpayer dollars go to it, but it's for uninsured and underinsured. And now, in fact, insured folks, but they have mental health, dental and medical. So people who have lost their jobs and they're terrified because they don't have health insurance or can't get their psych meds or whatever they need, there are places available and we need to shout it. Public health is also doing a great job bridging the gap. So please know that there are so many resources for help. There are people, you know, 1-800-715-4225 in Georgia. If you're suicidal.
Say that again, but say it slower.
1-800-715-4225.
And what was
for the Georgia Crisis Access Line.
And what was the website again?
FQHC.
Okay.
.org, federally qualified health center. And you have it in, you have Griffin. You have, I believe the Fayette Care Clinic is one.
Put that in the show
we have
notes,
so
right?
many. Yes, I'll be happy to put.
Okay.
I love, my favorite is to link people to resources and to be a resource. So I'm sorry, I got a little excited.
No, I want them to be there.
But I want to make sure that I got those out to you because people are panicked about getting services, but it is available.
I do have a question back to, since this is the beer and business podcast, and as a business owner or small, medium, whatever business owner, with your employees, I mean, you're always trying to, you should be trying to do stuff for your employees, right? And like, you'll have a day where it's a happy day. We'd bring in ice cream sandwiches. We do this, that, and the other thing. What can we do for our employees?
For mental and emotional health?
Yeah.
And I do want to, there are several larger corporations, not everybody, but one of the most underutilized resources, the EAP, the Employee Assistance Program. You can get X number of counseling sessions, quote unquote, for free, you know, through your organization. I mean, I've been on the EAP panels for many years. That's what actually I left corporate to go into counseling to help people while they're at work. It's called EAP. So please, please call that number and get some support right away. I mean, if you're willing to have like a let's say you have a shoebox or something on the wall, you're like, penny for your thoughts, and you can literally confidentially put it in a box or something like that, or a safe place for someone to put stuff. And then you can be like, hey, every Friday, we're going to address these questions, or we're going to have a mental health clinician come in, or we can video chat them in, or decide that if you can negotiate a rate with a clinician, let's say it's $50 and then you pay for half of it, or something, you know. I'm all about starting some gift cards for counseling. Well, that would be, but, you know,
that's huge. That's yeah. a big thing.
I know what I'm getting there for Christmas.
I mean,
thank you.
Just like a massage or something like that, or getting your hair done.
When
you
I worked in corporate world, I did take care. I mean, I did take advantage of the EAP. It was a great thing.
Yeah.
But what you just said was like a penny for your thoughts, and you can hire a professional to come in and talk to the group.
Absolutely.
Right now with, absolutely. If you are open for business and you still have employees working for you, I think that'd be a great thing to,
absolutely.
To do. Wow.
But
absolutely.
The other thing that I'm hearing you say is regardless of your situation, probably the best thing to do is just to reach out to somebody like yourself. Cause you said you do free consultations. Mm-hmm. Part of that phone call is, listen, Molly, I don't have insurance and I don't, what do I do? How am I going to pay? Right. Mm-hmm. And I imagine most people like yourself would be able to say, hey, you know what? There's a resource for you, or tell me a little bit more and let's figure out how we can make this work.
I'm kind of a unicorn because I geek out about helping people like that. But yes, other counselors will have definitely.
Sure. And if you find one that's like, oh, well, no ticky, no laundry, tell them to go fuck themselves and call Molly.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah, I've called for a free counseling session, but they ran out of time.
Oh, look at that. Somehow we've got a blacklist and the name Darren Flanagan's on it. So,
Or I'm like Elaine from Seinfeld when I'm on the chart and it goes and follows her up. Oh, you're him. Oh, God.
I love it.
But I think the most important thing, we've covered a lot of ground, but the one thing that I think is the most important for people is there are resources out there for you.
Yes.
And you may not understand all those resources.
Yes.
And don't hesitate. Like if you've seen the changes, if you have somebody that you're worried about, don't wait for it to be too late. You know, I mean, this is a beautiful thing. The most important part of our lives is our, you know, our health, our physical, spiritual, emotional health. And, you know, it's amazing to me how little the average person invests in their mental health over the course of their life. They'll go to see a doctor for their physical health and spend lots of money. They might go to church every week and invest in their spiritual health. But those same people will spend $0 or zero time on their emotional health.
Right.
I don't. And
well, I do it, but my counselor charges me double because then she has to go see another therapist after I see her. So,
or she has to go to confessional.
Get this off.
Forgive me, Father. I've sinned. Today I counseled Darren.
Oh, Darren.
Oh, Jesus. He was just in here.
Jesus. Literally.
They just perform an exorcist on her instead.
Child. Yeah. You can leave my child.
Yeah. Well, and I'll be self-disclosure that I dealt with suicidal thoughts. I started when I was 18 that I'm aware of, and I didn't know what they were, and I ran from them, and I tried to shake them out, and then, it was terrifying. Yeah.
You're here.
But I want you to know it's not abnormal at all. You know, we're going to either have issues towards ourselves or towards other people, and both ways there's help for everybody. I promise that there is. So there's hope for anybody who's struggling, I promise.
Well, if somebody would like to get a hold of you, Molly, how do they get a hold of your counseling service?
So right now, please don't call my phone number. You can text my phone number, 678-939-2442. And I've also started a new Facebook group where I'll be doing lives every day. It's called Feel Better Faster! ! And the name of my company is A Better Life Counseling and Coaching. And I do have a web presence. I'm also on Psychology Today. Molly Pruitt. I'm an LPC. That's Molly with an I. Pruitt. Yeah. Pruitt. So I'm
two
in several
L's
different
and an
places.
I and two
right.
T's.
Yeah.
We'll put all that in the show notes too.
Absolutely. So make sure you text me because I get in the weeds with the voicemail. So, but, and Feel Better Faster. That'll be great because it's a free resource and I pump as much information as I can about relationships, coping, anything I can. And I'm going to be very active on that.
You're getting ready to
do
some big, amazing online stuff.
Yeah. I really want to help as many people as I can for the most affordable and accessible way that I can as well.
Dynamite.
Well, listen, we appreciate you coming on the show. The biggest
thing for having me.
Yeah, the biggest thing for me is I want people to reach out to folks like yourself if they feel like they're in crisis or somebody that they know might be. And we shouldn't be afraid to have conversations like this.
No.
We really shouldn't. And this whole COVID pandemic, masks, I mean, I feel like we talked about a lot, but there's still a lot of ground we didn't even cover today. Yeah. This has been a huge deal. And we're not out of the woods. You know, we talk a lot about on this show what this has done for business, but for emotional and mental health, like this, the toll this has taken on some people is really big.
Huge. Mm-hmm.
And,
huge. So,
and we want you to feel comfortable reaching out to somebody like Molly for help.
And we mentioned that. Pay attention to your neighbors, pay attention to your friends.
Absolutely.
If you're not seeing them, go find them.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Right.
Ask them how their mom and them is.
Ask them how their mom and them is. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
So, well, thanks so much, Molly. This has been super enlightening.
Thank you guys so much for having me.
Absolutely.
Thank you for the line creep.
Well, we have a question. You liked it.
I did.
So thank you so much. This one.
Okay.
Once you finish that, you got to taste a little of this.
Okay.
Orangey sun. I saved a little bit
for orangey sun. So folks.
Not orgy, but orangey.
This is the last one of this.
It's a different beer.
We had this. You know what I haven't done?
What's that?
I haven't tried beer mimosa.
Oh, I haven't tried that. The beer mosa.
Beer mosa.
Yeah, I haven't tried that either.
With this, but I'm, now
peach?
That I've seen it.
Orangey.
Orange.
Oh, orangey.
Here, pour that in there.
Not a Bellini. Sorry.
Try that. No, it's not a Bellini.
Okay.
Yeah, try that.
So anyway.
Go to the brewery. They're open.
We appreciate it. They're open. They've got some live music Friday and Saturday evening, along with food trucks both nights, but they are open 7 days, seven evenings a week or afternoon and evenings a week.
You're allowed to go, Molly. You can progress.
Cash and carry too. You can
absolutely.
You drink it there on tap, and then they've got the cooler. You can take your six pack out, and they're sold in your local bottling shops.
Absolutely.
So we love that part.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Molly, thanks again for coming in. This has been great.
Thank you guys so much. I really appreciate it. This is awesome. Much. Yeah.
You were a lot calmer. You said.
I know. I'm really so excited for myself.
You did your first podcast. Congratulations.
Woo-hoo.
Folks, we'll see you next week.